And last, my mom. I don't think you know what you did. You had my brother when you were 18 years old. 3 years later, I came out. We were stacked, the odds were stacked against us. Single parent with two boys by the time you were 21 years old. Everybody told us we weren't supposed to be here. We moved from apartment to apartment by ourselves. One of the best memories I had is when we moved into our first apartment. No bed, no furniture, and we just all sat in the living room and just hugged each other. Cause we thought we made it. And when something good happens to you, I don't know about you guys, but I tend to look back to what brought me here. And you wake me up in the middle of the night in the summer times, making me run up a hill, making me do push-ups, screaming at me from the sideline of my games at 8 or 9 years old. We wasn't supposed to be here. You made us believe. You kept us off the street. You put clothes on our backs, food on the table. When you didn't eat, you made sure we ate. You went to sleep hungry. You sacrificed for us. You the real MVP.
Wow. I tell you what, if you watched that speech yesterday when Kevin Durant was named the NBA's most valuable player, if you watched that speech and you didn't get teared up, man, props to you, because I tell you what, watching that entire speech, it was perfect. Kevin Durant, I became a lifelong fan of his, watching him at that podium. Just account for, you know, as he talked about looking in the past, just kind of recount his entire life up to this point. He never thought he would be in the NBA. In fact, he went as far, you know, he kind of just looked back and said, hey, I wanted to be a recreational coach, basketball coach. Never thought that he would be in the NBA, let alone the NBA's most valuable player. And, you know, just memories of his mom, who was his biggest fan and his biggest motivation. You know, it was unbelievable to watch. It was one of those moments in sports where you just sit back and you just kind of soak it all in. And you know, he certainly deserves it. I tell you that, man, it was powerful. If you haven't seen it, it's everywhere throughout YouTube. And I'm glad we had to start the show. A great way to start the show for today. Just kind of looking at that moment with Kevin Durant, a person who definitely deserves the MVP honor. You know, not only for the things he does on the court, but off it as well. An unbelievable human being. So congrats to KD. Well, welcome to Current Sports, folks. We have a great show in store for you all today. We have a lot to talk about, including Robbie Ray, who had one impressive outing as he made his Detroit Tigers debut yesterday on the mound. Man, it was impressive nonetheless. And, you know, it was so funny watching the Twitter reaction from, you know, the start, before, just, you know, a few minutes before the start of that game yesterday till afterwards. I mean, the perceptions of Ray changed in a heartbeat. So, you know, he's certainly, you know, definitely changed some minds, many minds, with his outstanding debut yesterday. So we'll talk about Robbie Ray. Also, we will talk about Johnny Manziel. Johnny Football, of course, is the talk of the town when it comes to this year's NFL draft. And it's been reported that a few teams are actually going to pass up on Johnny Football. And, you know, it's such a crazy fiasco right now, even dating back to when we talked about his outing during Pro Day when he came in with the camouflage shorts, the helmet and pads on. And had a pretty impressive outing at Pro Day. I mean, everyone was there to watch him, you know, watch him try out and debut to see how he would perform. And it kind of just adds to just this entire discussion and this entire aura of where Johnny Manziel will go in the draft. Will he go early? Will he go in the first round? Will, you know, teams wait until the second round to get him? So we're going to just sit down and kind of debate on would we draft Johnny Manziel, and if so, where? So we'll talk about that in each and every Wednesday here on the show. You know what that means. That's right, Barbershop Wednesday, where we debate and discuss a certain area of sports that's topical. And today we have just two of them, to be exact, here. So we have a part one discussion on, if you didn't see this news, I mean, it really just blew my mind. This is another story that really had me in awe. Jaw was on the floor when I heard about Mark Jackson, who is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, who, of course, were eliminated by the Los Angeles Clippers. Mark Jackson was actually fired in the afternoon yesterday. It really just puzzled me because he had a great, great season with the Golden State Warriors, a great outing overall during his entire coaching tenure with the team. But the Warriors decided it wasn't good enough and said, hey, we got to fire you. So they fired Mark Jackson. The first thought that went through my head was, oh, man, that's I just don't get that. And then the second thought went through my head was, all right, Pistons, they better pick up the phone and start making some calls, because the Detroit Pistons could use a coach right now, especially one of the caliber of Mark Jackson's, okay? But it really just puzzles me, because there were so many across the entire sporting realm, especially in the media here, that just were scratching our heads on, you know, why fire a man who has had the track record of success that Mark Jackson has had with the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, we've seen certain instances and certain situations in the past when it comes to certain franchises and a relationship that those franchises have with a certain coach. It goes beyond sometimes the success of what happens on the gridiron or the hardwood. There were some extracurricular issues here at hand and at play that stem from, you know, reports that I'm reading about Mark Jackson's, you know, way that he managed the team and the way he handled different players. And, you know, upper personnel didn't agree with those actions, which led to a lot of tension and eventually led to Mark Jackson's firing yesterday. So when is it fair to fire? Fair to fire. That's what we're talking about on Barbershop Wednesday today. And we're asking all of you to call in and give your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. And you know, it's a part one and two Barbershop Wednesday type of day, because there's another issue at hand here with a more local feel, and that comes to as we talked about yesterday on our headliners, when it comes to the Big Ten tournament. The Big Ten tournament, if you don't know, is now being moved to Washington D.C. in the year 2017, which is definitely the polar opposite of where it's been the past few years, as of recently, as in Indianapolis and Chicago, which are much more closer locations. When you talk to that of course, Michigan State fans who want to make the trip out to the Big Ten tournament, now you possibly have to buy a plane ticket to go out there to D.C. to watch the Spartans play. What do you think about it? Is it a good move? I want to get your thoughts on that as well, because when I mentioned this on our headliners, I got a few emails and a few tweets here and there from upset fans of Spartan basketball. They were like, come on, man, you're really going to move it that far? Of course, Chicago being about, what, a 3-4 hour drive, Indy not being that far, about a 4 hour drive for Indy. I mean, it's not that far when you talk about those two locations. But now to D.C., it kind of puts a pickle in things for fans who want to travel. So I want to get your thoughts on that as well. Is it a good move to move the Big Ten tourney to D.C.? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. And before I get into our current sports quick hit headliners for today, I also want to remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes tonight. That's right. I sit down with Greg Iani, who is the MSU Deputy Athletic Director. Greg has done so much throughout his time here at MSU when it comes to the athletic venues, especially the athletic venues when it comes to updating those venues, the North End Zone project that's going on right now at Spartan Stadium, the new ice at Munn. I mean, there's so many that Greg has his hands on, and he's going to kind of give us a recap and talk about how the money is allocated in those respects. It should be very, very interesting to dive into that realm when it comes to athletic venues with Greg. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, there is still time tonight, folks. You can just sign up for free at WKAR.org. It's always a great time seeing your beautiful faces each and every Wednesday night here at the WKAR-TV studios. All right, without further ado, let's dive into your current sports quick hit headliners for this May 7th, 2014. Okay, Roby Ray, folks. Oh, man, what an outing Ray had. He struck out five and earned the win yesterday night in his major league debut for the Detroit Tigers in their 11-4 victory over the Houston Astros. Miguel Cabrera, he was fantastic, folks. He had a hot bat. He went 4-for-5 with a home run and four RBIs for the Tigers, who extended their winning streak now to 7 games. They are in one complete zone now. Now, Danny Wirth knocked in 3 runs for Detroit. The Astros had 3 hits, a blop double, and 2 infield singles before Ray recorded his 4th out of the game before he settled down after that. Now, Ray was pitching in place of Anibal Sanchez, who is on the disabled list right now with a right middle finger laceration. Ray is expected to start again Sunday for the Tigers, so we'll get to see Ray not once but twice this week. And the earliest Sanchez can return from the disabled list is the following day, that Monday. So certainly exciting, you know, to see how Roby came out yesterday, to see if he can duplicate that effort or come close to it on Sunday. That's certainly exciting stuff. And I tell you what, all the Ray haters kind of went out the window as that game proceeded inning by inning. So shout out to Robbie Ray. It was great watching him yesterday. As far as the Lansing Lugnuts go, folks, our local baseball action, Dane Phillips delivered an RBI single, and the Fort Wayne Tin Caps pitchers combined on a 6-hit 1-0 shutout of the Lansing Lugnuts in front of a Grand Slam school day crowd of, get this, 6,268 down at Cooley Law School Stadium yesterday. It was a beautiful day to go out and enjoy the game of baseball, I tell you. So good crowd on hand yesterday. Now, the only run of the day came on a 4th-inning liner to right by catcher Phillips, victimizing Lansing starter Shane Dawson. The Luggies and Tin Caps will play the rubber match of the 3-game setup tonight, Hump Day, featuring, get this, I haven't been to a game at Cooley Law School Stadium on a Wednesday since they enforced this special day. You know, due to the fact that I have to record a TV show tonight, but still, I got to go on a Wednesday because Humphrey the Camel, folks, makes an appearance each and every Wednesday on Hump Day. Oh, that's got to be fun stuff for the kids and everybody involved. Oh, but tonight they play the Tin Caps again. Humphrey the Camel will be in the house, and Lansing left-hander Matt Dermody is set to make his 2nd start of the season at 7:05 p.m. while righty Colby Cowgill starts for Fort Wayne. So that should be a fun time. Going out and enjoy that game should be a fun. It's always a fun time at any Lansing Lugnuts game. All right, and have you heard this story, folks? This is an interesting story. It's kind of disturbing, too. I mean, I'm glad he was safe after this. But Matt Williams, if you don't know Matt Williams, he is the Washington Nationals manager. Now, he witnessed a police chase while conducting a radio interview on his way to Nationals Park. And this happened today, folks. Now, Williams, he was being interviewed on the radio. Imagine this. You're being interviewed on the radio for 106.7 The Fan. And it was interrupted when his car was rear-ended by another vehicle, which crashed into several other cars in an attempt to evade the police pursuit. That's scary stuff. You're in the middle of an interview, and then boom. I hope none of our guests have to go through anything like that. Now, Williams said afterwards that, quote, "He just ran in the back of me. I just got rear-ended by a guy in a car. Hold on. This guy's crashing into people." Now, he did remain calm, as cool as the other side of the pillow, folks, throughout the entire process, telling the radio host that he was not injured while describing the scene as it unfolded right in front of him, saying, quote, "Yo, I'm good." Well, he didn't say yo, that's me throwing. "I'm good. There was a police car behind me and a guy in a car, and he tried to get by me. He just smoked me." So he's good. Williams is good, but man, is that scary stuff. I thought that was a very interesting story. All right, folks, Mike Babcock, head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, the NHL announced that he is a finalist for the Jack Adams Coach of the Year Award. How about that, man? Now, Babcock got the Wings to the playoffs for a 23rd consecutive season, despite a rash of injuries to key players. It was very impressive how they really rallied at the end of the season. Now, a franchise record, get this, 421-man games lost to injury, and joins Tampa Bay's John Cooper and Colorado's Patrick Roy as finalists. So we'll see if he grabs that award. Now, Roy led the Avs from last place finish in the Western Conference last year to a division title this season, while Cooper led the lowly Lightning to 46 wins, mostly without star Steven Stamkos. Now, the winner will be announced June 24th, in Las Vegas. So we'll see if Mike can pull down the hardware there. All right, and again, this is what we're opening up our lines to, at least one of the topical areas that we will be doing so for the Warriors. Firing Mark Jackson, a very, very successful outing to say the least, with the Golden State Warriors. But the Warriors have parted ways with Jackson now, firing him after winning 51 games for the first time since back in 1991-92. Now, Jackson led the Warriors to two consecutive playoff berths, frequently butted heads with ownership, and despite his on-court success, was rumored to be on the outs for most of the season. Now, Jackson parted ways with assistants Brian Scalabrine and Darren Erman during the season. Now, the later reportedly recording conversations with Jackson and other Warriors coaches. That was Darren. Now, the team owner and CEO Joe Lacob released the following statement saying, quote, "Mark Jackson has had a big impact on the improvement of our team and the success that we've had over the last couple of years. Nonetheless, we must make some difficult decisions in our day-to-day operations of the club, and this would certainly qualify as one of those examples. We wish Mark the best of luck in his future endeavors and thank him for his contributions over the last 3 years," end quote. Again, that's from team owner and CEO Joe Lacob in a statement talking about Mark Jackson. And we want to get your thoughts on this. This is our Barbershop Wednesday because there have been many, 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 many coaches out there who have been fired for reasons that necessarily doesn't transcend to their success on the court, on the field, and you wonder what's going on behind closed doors. This certainly had to be one of those incidences, as I just said. I mean, he frequently, you know, got into it and had quarrels with ownership, and they didn't like his decisions when it came to managing certain players and so on and so forth. So they decided to fire him. I tell you what, I want to ask you all, when is it fair to fire? Does it just solely, you know, list, you know, what the kind of success that you have in the win and loss column, or does it go beyond that? And, you know, ideally, you want to, at the end of the day, you want to have good relationships with the people you work with, but if you're winning, should you be fired? That's always the question I've always had, and I want to get your thoughts on it. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I guess in certain instances, it goes beyond the X's and O's, as we like to say here on Current Sports. So, all right, well, Michael Sam, folks, former Missouri defensive end and current NFL draft hopeful Michael Sam has won a very cool award, the Arthur Ashe Courage Award. How about that? Sam announced he was gay earlier this year and will likely become the first openly gay NFL player this season. Now, he won Defensive Player of the Year in the storied SEC Conference last season and led Mizzou to a Cotton Bowl win over Oklahoma State. Now, Sam will receive the award at the ESPYs. How about that on July 16th? I think Drizzy Drake is going to be hosting that. Drake is a rapper, folks. All right. Marcel Darius. This is an interesting story here. We talk about NFL arrests constantly here on the show. Marcel Darius, Buffalo Bills Pro Bowl defensive lineman, was arrested yesterday, on Monday, in Alabama on drug charges. Now, Alabama state troopers are saying that Darius was arrested on possession of a controlled substance and drug paraphernalia. Now, Darius was selected third overall in 2011. Is in his fourth season right now with the Bills. The 24-year-old has had 7.5 sacks, 71 tackles, and appeared in his first Pro Bowl last season. So another NFL player getting the cuffs slapped right on him. All right, and according to multiple reports, the Cleveland Browns nor Oakland Raiders will select former Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Manziel. Manziel, also known as Johnny Football, is projected to be a first-round pick and is projected to potentially be drafted in the top fives. But the Browns and Raiders are saying, uh-uh, not with us. So, again, we're debating that as well. And Tom Brady, how about this? Rap mogul Dr. Dre has reportedly put an offer on Tom Brady's $50 million mansion in Brentwood, California. The thing is redonkulous, folks. The 18,700-square-foot home hit the market in March and features, get this, 5 bedrooms, 9 bathrooms, sits on 4 acres, and also has a waterfall, infinity pool. Don't even know what infinity pool. I don't know what that means, infinity pool, but it sounds expensive. And a home gym. My goodness. Now, Dr. Dre reportedly bought it for $40 million, $10 million less than the asking price at $50 million. Brady and his wife are planning to move to Boston full-time and are constructing a new mansion over the East Coast. Tom Brady and his wife, Giselle, actually had this mansion built specifically for their needs. They mapped it out, and it was built specifically for them, and now they're going to build another one. And $40 million is the asking price. And, you know, it's a drop in the bucket for Dr. Dre, seeing as though he's worth over $500 million. So, my goodness, it's got to be good to be rich. All right, done with your current sports topics, folks. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 855-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. I'm always tweeting left and right, folks, all the time, and certainly appreciate all of you who tweet me back. And like, I love to debate on social media, so you can do that. Again, AlMartinWKAR. Follow me, folks. All right, again, ton to talk about today. I want to start this conversation talking about Robbie Ray. Now, if you didn't check out him yesterday, Ray was fantastic. Again, he struck out five, earned the impressive win in doing so. 11-4 was the final over the Houston Astros. He looked very impressive. You know, there was a lot of criticism out there from many folks who did not like the Ray acquisition. And it really blew my mind. There were even some fans out there who, if you looked in the stands, that talked about, Fister. There were some people wearing Doug Fister jerseys and saying there was even one website I was looking up, you know, doing research on this topic. There were even some people out there who thought that this was the worst move of the offseason. Could not believe it. But I think Ray put a lot of people to shame with his outing yesterday. It was very impressive. And for all of those who were kind of wavering on Miguel Cabrera also kind of put some haters to shame, going 4-5 with a home run, 4 RBIs for the Tigers. Again, their winning streak is, again, they're in a zone, folks. 7-game win streak right now. And also Danny Wirth, he knocked in 3 runs for the Tigers. So I want to get your calls right now on the Ray acquisition. Seeing Ray yesterday, does it kind of change your perception if you were one of those individuals that said, what are we doing? Why is Ray a part of the Tigers? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky now join me. Guys, watching that game yesterday, I was certainly impressed. It was a little rocky to start, though. Ray came out on the mound, and he looked a little bit nervous. Nerves got to him a little bit. He was trying to find his control on the mound, but that quickly settled down after about 20 pitches, and then boom. You started to see him get in this zone, and you started to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and he just kept it going, inning to inning to inning. It was impressive to watch, and I think I wasn't one of those guys who said when this move was made to get Ray, I wasn't one of the guys who kind of bashed it and said, oh, what are the Tigers doing? I wanted to see how the kid played, because looking at his numbers, previous to his acquisition with the Tigers, they weren't bad. And hearing Brad Ausmus, how he just continued to rain down praise on Ray, which was big for me. I mean, he said that this guy could strike out any major league hitter in the game right now. The praise coming out of the camp when Brad Ausmus was working with him in the offseason led to a lot of positive vibes on my end, so I didn't want to bash him until I saw him out in the mound for the firsthand. And seeing what he did yesterday was certainly impressive, and you got to be encouraged from that. Now, how you can duplicate it, we'll see. We'll see. But it was great to see him out in the mound and see what he had in his back pocket.
Yeah, great to see. And that's a criticism the Tigers have had. Who's coming up in their system? Because if you remember when they cried Anibal to the pitching rotation, you were wondering who's going to lurk at there at five. You had Fister in the back end. You had Porcello. They get rid of Fister. Porcello was kind of left to the wolves a little bit, and now you're seeing some growth in the pitching. Want to talk about one thing that I saw on Twitter from Buster Olney. He said that Robbie Ray reminds him of two things. His delivery is somewhat like Bruce Hurst. And if you remember about Bruce Hurst, he was traded for Brad Ausmus, the current manager, back in 1993. So I thought that was funny. Similar pitching motions. Second thing, he works very fast. He's pretty fast on the mound. He throws a lot of strikes. So I don't know if you two got that same vibe, but according to Buster Olney, Robbie Ray was very impressive.
He was, without a doubt.
I think, you know, you have to say he was impressive. Sure, this is also one start against the worst team in Major League Baseball. Mm.
It's Houston Astros. Yeah.
So before you go saying he's the next big thing, I think you got to temper your expectations a little bit. It's a long season, and this is one game. Was it encouraging? Absolutely. I think more than anything, it's a good sign that he had a rough start and then settled in. Because a lot of times when you're young, it's your first game with a new team. It can snowball. When things go poorly early, they can snowball, and that kind of takes you out of it. But it was encouraging to see him kind of keep his confidence, keep his cool, and just keep plugging away. And eventually, you know, the strikeouts came, the outs came, you know, getting batters out. it all just started to gel for him. So I think as far as keeping his cool and maybe showing a little bit of maturity beyond his years, sure, but saying that one game against the Astros is proof that the Doug Fister trade was a good one, it's too close or too early to call.
Yeah, it always comes down to consistency in the world of baseball. We know that, and I definitely agree with you in that aspect. It was just good, though, because you saw the amount of criticism when this move was made, and I'm sure that Ray, when he came out on that mound, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders to come out and have a good outing. And for him to get this monkey off his back early, I think, to come out and have a good outing, to get game one out of his system and to show what he can do, now he can kind of just focus more on the game and not catering to the expectations of those fans who were ideally hating on that trade. So it was good to finally get it out there. Now he can kind of settle in and we can really see now how good he can really be. So it's always good to get that first one off your back. And I'm always interested. That's why I was so interested in last night, even though it is against, like you said, Matt, the Houston Astros, for goodness sake. But all of the critics out there who criticized the trade and, just how is he going to come out? You know, just the nerves of that moment to see how he would handle it. I thought he did a great job. And now he can focus on baseball and we will really see now. We can peel back the layers of the onion and see what he's really made of now. So it was impressive to watch. And how about the Tigers, though? Again, they just keep winning. My God. I was listening to Sirius XM the other day, and they had a national telecast on the MLB. I forget the MLB channel on Sirius, and that's all they talked about. They talked about the Tigers for like 15 minutes on how now, not only is there's a lot of expectations on this franchise now, because you start to see them rack up these wins. They do it every year. They've been doing it for the past seasons now, and the expectations now are World Series or bust, and that's what everyone, not just here in Michigan, there's a national perception now that Detroit is the favorite to win the World Series, and there is a lot of pressure on this team right now to do so. And how they handle this game by game as the season goes on, man, it's really going to be interesting to see how they deal with those expectations.
Yeah, very excited. What do you guys think? How long do you think Robbie Ray lasts? The way too early predictions of Robbie Ray.
I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's a player who, looking at just yesterday, he's a player who doesn't listen to the critics. He doesn't seem to get fazed at the pressure, and I think that's really key here when you talk about coming to a team like the Detroit Tigers and trying to deal with those critics who are criticizing you left and right, and trying to just play game by. He showed me that he can deal with pressure, and that right there is really a key to pitching for me in the major leagues. I think he'll be fine though.
I think he'll be all right. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens once he hits the wall, because he's going to.
Everybody does. The season
is too long for rookies to come in, especially rookie pitchers, and be effective the entire year. I'm interested to see how he bounces back, because there will be a stretch where he struggles. And you know, a lot of times rookie pitchers come in and they pitch well for a month, and then they start playing teams again, teams that have seen them. Teams get more tape to scout, and they start to figure him out a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see once, you know, the AL kind of adjusts to Robbie Ray. Can he bounce back? Does he have a counter? Can he evolve as a pitcher? Can he grow as a pitcher? Because one game, again, does not a career make. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think he'll be fine for a few months, have a rough patch, and then I think he'll get back to where he wants to be. So I think it'll be up and down like any really rookie campaign is. But overall, a success.
Yeah, I think so, too, at the end of the day. So, all right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, let's talk a little Johnny Football, because as we talked about in our current sports quick hit headliners, I mean, there are two teams that are reportedly not going to take Johnny Manziel, and there's a lot of speculation now on whether he will be a top five pick, whether he even go in the first round. And, you know, just kind of we'll dissect a little bit and kind of place our feet in the shoes of multiple GMs throughout the NFL, which is a tough thing to do, but we'll do it. And give our thoughts on whether or not we'll take Johnny Football. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Luckheed. All right, guys. Well, as we kind of talked about at the top of the hour, Johnny Football, according to multiple reports, the Cleveland Browns nor the Oakland Raiders will select Johnny Football in this year's upcoming draft. Manziel, of course, right now is projected to be a first-round pick, even rumored to be in the top five. I don't know how that stands right now with the Browns and Raiders reportedly passing up on him. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk left and right, even at the beginning of this week when we kind of dived in the draft a little bit and talked about Johnny Football. I want to ask you guys, when it comes to Johnny Football, because when I look at him and I looked at his body of work, you know, throughout college and how he performed at Pro Day, which a lot of people put a lot of weight on for, I don't know why, but they put a lot of weight on Pro Day. We know how that is, and the combine and what, and so on and so forth. Johnny Football had one of the best college outings for any college football player, you know, not even just a quarterback position, but college football player in general in the history of the game. He was unbelievable throughout his college career. Heisman Trophy winner, I mean, as a freshman. Unbelievable. I mean, right now he's certainly a name that's talked about left and right, and deservedly so, looking at what he accomplished in college. The question now is, should these teams in the first round or even in the top five picks possibly risk it and take him? Now, when you talk about risk, for me, when I look at Johnny Football, when I look at his body of work, the guy could throw and he makes things happen. Unorthodox situation. So we're not talking about, for me, a Tim Tebow here, where Tim Tebow, if you ask me, couldn't, his accuracy was not there. He couldn't throw the football at all. He could put it on the ground. He could run a little bit. Johnny Football reminds me of kind of a Brett Favre-ish, Michael Vick weird mix here, because he can make things happen with his feet. He can make things happen when the play breaks down. And he's a relatively, you know, he's not as accurate as a lot of people would want him to be, as a lot of, you know, scouts out there would want him to be. But he's relatively accurate for the average college quarterback coming out in this year's draft. Overall, though, when you talk about what team should take him, it all depends on, for me, what do you need? If you don't need a quarterback, don't draft a quarterback. That's how I've always looked at it. Obviously, he's the sexy pick. He will probably put butts in the stands. But at the end of the day, what do you need? That's the first thing you got to look at when you talk about the NFL draft. A team like, you know, the Cleveland Browns or the Oakland Raiders could certainly use an aura like a Johnny Football to bring fans out to support the team a little bit. Because right now, I think those are two franchises, specifically the Oakland Raiders, which are dying for someone who's the face of the franchise, a player that you can look at and say, man, you know what I mean? They don't have that right now for either one of those teams, I don't think. And he's definitely the sexy pick. And for them, it really surprised me they were willing to come out so early, especially the day before the draft, to say that we're not going to take him. It opens the door now for a lot of teams out there to possibly look and do that. Again, it's been rumored that the Cowboys are going to look into this. Jerry Jones came out last night and said, well, right now we're comfortable with what we have. And he didn't come out and say, no, we don't want Johnny Football. But he said right now we're comfortable with what we have. And, of course, Tony Romo. But at the end of the day, I think there's going to be a team out there that's going to risk it and take Johnny Football in the first round. I think he's a first-round pick. Whether he's a top-five pick, I don't know. But I think he will be a top, you know, maybe 20 pick. And I think deservingly so. I think he's earned that right.
I think anytime you have teams that are announcing their intentions 2 days before the draft, mm-hmm. you can just throw it away. It's garbage.
Mm-hmm.
They're all just trying to smokescreen one another, trying to improve their chances of maybe making a trade, trading down. Let's say you're the Cleveland Browns. If you say you're not going to take Johnny Manziel number four, maybe Khalil Mack is there, and someone else wants to trade up for him. So maybe you slide down to number seven and get Johnny Manziel anyway, in addition right. to more picks. So these teams are all just trying to posture against one another to get a better draft day haul. Mm-hmm. Whether that includes taking Johnny Manziel at four or seven, I mean, who cares? Like, the guy is,
as long as they get him.
He's one of the top quarterbacks. We all know how important the quarterback position is in the NFL. He will be a first-round draft pick. Mm. Someone will take him probably in the top 10. I don't see him sliding out of the top 10. I don't see Blake Bortles sliding out of the top 10. I can't believe how far Teddy Bridgewater is sliding, which is just the most
crazy.
Ridiculous.
I don't get that. I don't
the
get
most
that
ridiculous
either.
Development of the draft is Teddy Bridgewater sliding.
Yeah.
But if I'm a team, let's say I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, why wouldn't you draft Johnny Manziel?
I have no idea. Exactly. I mean,
there is no one in the stands at Jacksonville Jaguars.
No,
home
no
games.
One.
This could potentially save your franchise, keep them in the city they're in, rather than having them move to LA or move to wherever. why wouldn't you draft a guy who is going to, A, be a lightning rod, B, be the face of your franchise, and C, be a pretty darn good player? So I think, you know, if you're one of these teams that are just down in the dumps, and most of the top teams are, as far as draft order goes, why wouldn't you roll the dice?
I agree. And, you know, it's crazy because I was watching reports this morning, you know, on ESPN, and there were multiple analysts from Michael Smith to, you know, Jamel Hill to left and right, and we're saying Johnny Manziel should brace himself for a big fall in the draft. They were even debating on whether or not he'll be a first-round pick. I disagree with that. But Alex?
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you guys here, because if you look at some past quarterbacks that have slid, how about Brady Quinn? He was supposed to be a top-five pick. He ended up sliding out of the first – later out of the early first round, slides mid-first round, he gets up in the 20s. So for me, as much as the pre-draft announcements and who you're not going to draft here and the Oakland Raiders aren't going to take Quinn – we don't know if these guys are announcing it. This is just some reporter that might know some guy in the ticket office that might know some guy somehow related to the organization that told them this. So for whatever reason, I'm not buying any of this garbage right now about who would be drafted. I'm sorry, but I'm not buying any of it.
Where do you think he's going?
Where I think – that's the thing. I don't know. If I had a guess, I think he's going to slide out of the first round, because
– You think he's
for me,
second round?
Yeah. Like I said, not second round, slide out of the early first round. I'm sorry. I think he's going to slide out of the top 10. I think he's going to be very similar to what Brady Quinn was. There's a lot of question marks with them. And if you know first round, early first round draft picks, question marks are never in the top 10 picks. All the top 10 picks are usually surefires. There's a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong.
I don't know about that. There's
been some cases.
Jamarcus Russell.
You're right. Jamarcus Russell. I was just about to say that. Jamarcus Russell. But when it comes to most, I'd say a high percentage of first round, maybe top 10 picks, most of them don't have the question marks that Johnny Manziel has. Is that agreed?
Well, one of those, because for me, I heard this like 20 times this morning, the question marks of Johnny football. I mean, I don't think those question marks are question marks at all. They're periods at the end of the day, because looking at what he did, I mean, Johnny football, you know what you're getting. You're getting a relatively very good passer, I think, who's relatively accurate, if not the most accurate passer in the game, and a guy who can make things happen with his feet. He's very elusive. You know what you're getting when you draft, and you're getting the media frenzy. That's another thing you gotta account for.
You think so, but not really. Look at Jason White from Oklahoma. Way name that's blast from the past. This guy proved himself in college, won tons of awards.
Jason White was like 30 when he got drafted.
No,
he wasn't that old, but he was like a sixth-year senior.
Doesn't matter.
He got
doesn't
hurt
matter.
His senior year.
He was 23, 24. That doesn't matter. The point is, Johnny Manziel, the question marks that surround him, will his height translate to the NFL? Is he going to be matching up against these huge linemen? How will he fare? We've seen many short NFL quarterbacks, but how will Johnny Manziel? There's no surefire thing that Johnny Manziel will be.
But that's what any of these prospects, though. I mean, you can say you can say that what you just, you can give that spiel to any of the prospects, whether it be on defense or offense. You don't know how good. We really don't know how exactly good any of these prospects are going to be coming out of college. But you can kind of predict it based on their body of work and what they did in college. And Johnny football's, his career was almost flawless in college.
I see that. Flawless career. There's no way that they're not going to produce at all. But what I'm saying is, let's compare Cam Newton. Cam Newton, he was going to contribute in some level. With his frame, with his body, you knew he was going to contribute. With Jamarcus Russell, very similar to Newton, big frame quarterback, but he had his off-the-field issues that sideline him. Johnny Manziel, I think that he's going to produce in some capacity, but he has bust potential. I think the fact is that he's a smaller quarterback. He just has bust potential.
But isn't that when any prospect comes out?
You're telling me that Cam Newton doesn't have bust potential?
Yeah,
he was going to be good no matter what.
Jadeveon Clowney has bust potential. I mean, Sammy Watkins has bust potential.
To say Cam Newton didn't have bust potential when he was involved in that huge scandal at Auburn where his dad got paid $160,000 is crazy. He had red flags up the wazoo. The fact is, he was a talented player, so he went number one overall. If you're telling me that the Vikings aren't going to be salivating if quarterbacks like Bortles, Manziel, and Bridgewater are all there at 8, they're not going to draft any of them, you're crazy.
And Lord knows they need a quarterback, without a doubt. And that's the thing, though. When you talk about these prospects, you talk about bust potential, Alex. I feel as though any player coming out of that argument is made for anybody.
Go back to Aaron Curry a few years ago. He was a linebacker at Wake Forest. People thought he was an absolute 100% lock, sure thing. Mm-hmm. He's out of the league. That
you
was like
know.
3 years ago.
Right.
And he got drafted by the Seahawks.
Right.
So, I mean, they would know defensive talent. They thought they knew what they were getting. he wound up out of the league in a few years. I mean, there's just no way to know about any of these guys. There's always that element of what if.
What if things can
go in any direction.
And now, if anything, though, that you can kind of give a surefire answer on is the way this is going to impact your franchise financially. If you whoever drafts Johnny Football,
you're selling jerseys.
You're selling jerseys. People are going to come out to watch him. You're going to put butts in the stands. That is a surefire given. So it's all about, at the end of the day, what you need and what you want, whether it be on the field or off it. And again, off the field, now you're going to get a media frenzy. Lord knows, I mean, it's going to be a media frenzy everywhere Johnny Football goes. Cameras surrounded around, training camp left and right. It can become a distraction. How you deal with that, I mean, you got to take so much into account that right now, I mean, there's a risk in that aspect, if anything. In that aspect, there's a risk in drafting Johnny Football in that regard. So.
I agree. Yeah, and like I said earlier, I see it kind of like Tebow in terms of the media frenzy
I can see
it. So would I draft him personally on a team, coming back in full circle now after that little
– If I'm a Cleveland Browns or Oakland Raiders, I'm drafting him. I don't know. That shocked me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Would I draft him? Not really, because I like to fly under the radar. That's just me. But if I'm a team that – especially like a Cleveland Browns team that's franchise, it's been kind of iffy every year, that needs to put fans in the seats, then yes. Mm. That for me, plus, if you're a franchise that needs fans in the seats, then yes.
Plus, I mean, you're the Cleveland Browns. I mean, he's coming in to succeed Brandon Whedon.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a high bar to clear for Johnny Manziel. Even in his first game, the second he steps out on the field, he's a more dangerous player than Brandon Whedon ever will be. I mean, it's an upgrade regardless of how it does. He could bomb out of the league in a year, and he's still better than Brandon Whedon.
I agree.
Would I draft him? I would draft Bridgewater over him anyway, but that's another story.
That's another debate.
I do think, however, if he does, let's say he has that slide where he goes, let's say he gets drafted by the Browns at number 26 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best thing that could happen for him, because then he has that motivation. He has... You know, you'll be hearing all year next year when he's having success.
He's talking about,
oh, the 25 guys that are picked ahead of me. I know all their names. I can't believe teams drafted other guys over me. You'll hear those stories because it happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at Russell Wilson.
Right.
I mean, teams had fears about his height coming into the league, and he just won a Super Bowl.
Right.
And teams are now kicking themselves because, wow, we could have got Russell Wilson in the second round, and we didn't take him.
Exactly.
I mean, you always kick yourself more for the guys you don't pick.
And you know what's so crazy now, because I think the league is kind of, and the way the game is played, especially from the quarterback position, has evolved so much over time now. It's not like, you know, back in the 90s or the 80s where, you know, the quarterback just sat in the pocket and threw the ball, and you know if he was an accurate quarterback in college that he was going to be a relatively accurate one in the pros now. Now you have, you know, the players who run the option so much. I mean, Russell Wilson is not only a quarterback who can beat you through the air, he can beat you with his legs. I mean, you're starting to see quarterbacks in that. Colin Kaepernick is the same way. I could go on and on and on. Quarterbacks, that position is evolving so much that a lot of teams are starting to look at quarterbacks who can do more than just throw the ball, and that's changing the way it makes it harder how you evaluate players coming out of college, which is another aspect you got to take into account. So it's so much. I, at the end of the day, though, I think he is a first-round pick. Whether he's a top pick in the first round, though, I don't know. I think there's a lot of debate going on. You never know what's going on in the room of a GM. So we'll see, though. All right, let's hit the second break. When we come back, guys, we'll talk about Mark Jackson, who was fired. That blew my mind. Going to lunch, I heard this.
Al. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's always fun with Alex, man. All right, we'll come back and talk about Mark Jackson. When is it fair to fire? Fair to fire, folks. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, reminding you that Current Sports TV tapes tonight. I will be sitting down with the Deputy Athletic Director, Greg Iani. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, which tapes tonight at 6 o'clock, you can do so by signing up online for free at WKAR.org. All right, well, let's shift gears here now. Barbershop Wednesday now starts, folks. And our Barbershop Wednesday topic today centers on a coach, a man who was fired, lost his job after a pretty successful tenure with the Golden State Warriors Ball Club. Mark Jackson was fired, folks. It sent shockwaves throughout the sporting world and left many shaking their heads, including myself. We are taking your calls right now to talk about it. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I believe we have a caller right now. Kirk from Grand Ledge wants to weigh on it. How you doing, Kirk? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing just fine, Al. Now I need to say one more thing about Johnny Manziel, and that is, if I hear another word about Johnny Manziel before Thursday, I think I'm going to puke.
Right. I know, right? His name is everywhere.
There's more talk about him, and he hasn't played an NFL down yet, than what was the discussion about Tim Tebow when he was in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, it's just terrible. Anyway, Mark Jackson, when is it appropriate to fire? Okay. And from listening to you earlier, I get the gist of what you're saying. The guy had a winning record. He took a franchise that was pretty stinky and had them in the playoffs for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And why is this guy being fired? Now here's the context that I want to put it in. When was it appropriate for Rick Carlisle to be fired by the Pistons? He basically did the same thing. The Pistons stunk up until that point.
Yeah.
He got them to the conference finals. When was it appropriate to fire Larry Brown? He got them a championship. The bottom line is the owners own the ball. If they don't want you to play with it, they don't have to. They'll take it away, and you get fired. You work at the will of the people with the money.
Yep. That is very well put, Kirk. I totally agree with you. And that's an interesting example that he brings up, because I remember when Rick Carlisle, we talked about this last month. Rick Carlisle, a man who led the Pistons, I mean, from down the dumps, to a team that was competing for championships left and right. They won the Central Division Championship, I don't know how many times in a row under Rick. And then all of a sudden, he's gone. They get Rasheed Wallace. I could have coached the team to a championship during that year, but Larry Brown comes in, does a great job. They win a championship. They go to another championship the following year. They go to the finals and lose to the Spurs, I believe. But anyway, I mean, we see it so many times. But for me, this is a move, kind of like what Kirk said. It came from ownership. This definitely, without a doubt, looking at Mark's track record of success, first time they've won 51 games since back when I was 2 years old in 1992, he led the Warriors to two consecutive playoff berths. I mean, I could go on and on when it comes to his resume of success with this ball club. When this move happened, and we're listening to SiriusXM on my way to get some lunch, and they had a reporter on who was near the locker room where the meeting was being held, where reporters were waiting for Mark to come out. And he was saying that, yeah, this doesn't look good right now. I mean, it doesn't look like Mark is going to be back with his team. We'll know in a few minutes. Next thing you know, 2 minutes goes by, Mark Jackson's fired. And it's a move that was made due to off the court issues when it came to his management with different players, when it came with he just butted heads too many times with ownership, and that's why this move was made. Mark Jackson is going to find no problem as far as finding another head coaching job, without a doubt. But as far as what he did for the Warriors franchise, they're missing out on a great coach, and it just shocked me. It just really, really shocked me. Alex?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not as surprised. If you look at all the off-the-court issues, like I talked about when we were at the break, from trying to fire Scalabrine to the Ehrman conversations, the assistant coach who was that defensive guru for them, to tons of different feuds with players and not practicing with them. For me, it's a morale thing. And when you see the Clippers totally transforming their organization, when you see the Lakers transcending downward, Golden State's looking to make a splash. And I think that their bar is set very high at this point. I think they're looking for a complete coach. And I just don't think Mark Jackson was there. Look, he gave him results. He gave him results. He took him to the playoffs 2 years in a row. He's a proven coach. But when it comes to the morale and around the locker room, we saw it with Sterling. The morale wasn't there. And I think that this team wants a good morale in the locker room, off the court, and they're looking for a certain image.
Alex, first of all, I want to put this into context. We are not a part of the Golden State Warriors organization. We don't know what was going down. We know reports. We've read reports. We don't know exactly what was going down
Sure.
when it came to ownership. I want to put that into context first. Sometimes I hear stories like this, guys, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way, because at the end of the day, you have to let the coach coach. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, Mark Jackson, if he feels as though Brian Scalabrine if he's not bringing anything to the table where it's transcending to the success of the ball club, and he feels as though it's the right move to let him go, let him coach. Let him do his thing.
Fine.
Ownership tries too much to have their hands on so many aspects of the team. If they feel it's wrong, they say, hold on, you can't do that. You cannot. If you're going to hire a head coach, you got to let him do his job. If you do not let him do his job, then, hey, he'd rather be somewhere else, to be honest with you.
I agree 110%. This is all about friction with the front office and about ownership trying to get their hands into the day-to-day operations of the basketball team, which is ridiculous.
I hate it. It's like Jerry Jones.
You have to let the coaches coach it. And Brian Scalabrine reportedly just didn't talk to Mark Jackson for 5 weeks.
Just out of nowhere.
Just decided because he didn't agree with the coaching style. That's... He's basically your boss,
right?
If you're Brian Scalabrine, you shouldn't be able to just say, you know what, skip it. We'll
sounds I'll like catch some up elementary with him school
that,
stuff.
Exactly, it's ridiculous. You know, Darren Erman recording conversations, and you know, some reports said he was taking them back to the front office. So it just seemed like ownership and the GM just wanted too much control over the team. Like you said, you hired this guy to coach your team. Let him coach the team,
right?
And on the other side of it. I mean, we look at, you know, oh, maybe they're a disappointment because they lost in the first round of the playoffs. I don't know. I don't know if this team was that good. I mean, you look at the moves they made. They lose Jarrett Jack and Carl Landry from last year. Mm-hmm. They make the huge trade to get Andre Iguodala.
Right.
Andre Iguodala was not good this year by any stretch. He had a career low, or the lowest since his rookie year in scoring. He had 9 points a game. Andre Iguodala can't get double-figure scoring. Are you kidding me? He had the lowest rebounding percentage of his career, lowest assists per game since his second year in the league. Mm. Trading for him messed up Harrison Barnes. So I think, you know, Harrison Barnes wasn't accustomed to coming off the bench, couldn't really find a role, had a sophomore slump. I think you look at the moves the front office made, and Mark Jackson is the guy taking the fall for it. It's like they assemble this roster, think they're going to win. You know, we're going to make a run to the finals this year because we have Andre Iguodala. We made these moves. They don't have as good a year as they did last year as far as the playoffs go. And you got to start pointing fingers. And I think when they struggled in the season, I mean, you could hear the smoke starting to build. You could see the smoke starting to build that, man, Mark Jackson might not be back next year unless they have a great run in the playoffs. Obviously, they didn't do that, and now he's out.
Right.
But considering that the players all loved him, I mean, Steph Curry had nothing but praise for Mark Jackson. Draymond Green loved Mark Jackson. David Lee loved Mark Jackson. I feel like morale, if anything, was in his corner. The players loved him. His relationship with the front office.
Yeah.
That's where the friction happened, and that's why he's out of a job right now.
Oh, yeah. Watching NBA TV, and they would constantly have these different features, and they had one on the Warriors. And like you said, I mean, he would have shooting contests with Steph Curry during every practice. I mean, jokes left and right. I mean, they seem like a very cohesive, very close-knit group of guys. But, like I said, it's that ownership. If you can't ruffle the feathers of your boss. If you do, your job's going to be in jeopardy no matter what you do on the court or the field.
And the thing is, I mean, Joe Lacob, the owner, is new. I mean, he mm-hmm. bought the Warriors a few years ago. He wants it to be his vision. And when you have maybe a personality like Mark Jackson, who, you know, played in the league for over a decade, you know, he's an established NBA mind. You know, he worked for the media for a while. You're going to clash. You're going to have those personalities clash. And I think the owner just wanted it to be his vision, his way or the highway, and that's exactly what happened.
You guys are all feeding into why I'm not surprised by this. Obviously, the owner assembles the team. The coach has a say, but it's obviously the owner's decision. New owner, he gave Jackson 3 years to build his team. He made the playoffs 2 years. He didn't really have a say on what the personnel went, but the owner's also responsible for a lot of the operations. He's responsible for hiring some of the assistant coaches. He's in charge of hiring some of the other personnel, some of the trainers, some of the people that work in the arena. He's in charge of everything. And part of being a good coach is also being a good leader. And the fact that you have your whole coaching staff turning on you and coming back to the front GM and owner and telling about how frustrated they are with Jackson. The ownership makes decisions. They let certain coaches go. Darren Erman gets fired weeks before the playoffs. When you're trying to, it's supposed to be your best season ever. But, and you're getting fired weeks before the playoffs?
Alex, the man was recording conversations. It had doesn't nothing matter. To do with basketball.
What if he was recording for a point? We don't know what he was recording
for. He was recording. Somebody's recording conversations I'm having with players that has nothing that have nothing to do with basketball, oh, he's getting the snip.
But we don't know that. We don't know why he was recording. Maybe he was talking about what Mark Jackson needs to be doing better, and since he's the head coach, the assistants can't do anything about it. Whatever it was, the owner obviously had a vision. I'm not surprised because obviously there's something in that office that wasn't going right. And when it comes to Mark Jackson being a player's coach, as much as the players love them, is this league ran by the players? No. It's ran by people higher up.
If you're winning, I mean, again, 51 wins this season. If you are winning, and this is all of this fiasco, if you will, is transcending to wins on the court. What's the problem? If he wants to make a move and the move is transcending to success on the court, they're winning. What is the problem? Why don't you just let the man do his job? We've seen far too many times. I can go to talk about my Cowboys right now when it comes to Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is known for just kind of sticking his nose too far up, you know, into the personnel when it comes to coaching, when it comes to the players, to the point where it's like, dude, do you just want to come down and coach the team? I'm sitting there like, just you got to let people do their jobs at the end of the day. If you don't, it becomes a hindrance for not only you, but everybody around you, the players included. And this is one of those situations where it's just a classic example of just ownership. I just feel as though ownership was just trying to do too much and trying to have their hands on everything, which you cannot do as an owner. And if you try to do that, you're trying to have too much of a hands-on approach to things. And I hate it because it happens to multiple franchises. And I think a lot of jobs are lost, undeservingly so, due to it.
Al, do you remember a guy by the name of Flip Saunders? Do you know how many times he won and made the playoffs? Tons of times. Remember when he got fired? Do you remember why? Because he couldn't advance as far in the playoffs as much as the team was built. It's the same thing when the Pistons were here.
Yeah, but this is not the same situation because this team wasn't built to go farther.
Look at the matchup with
the Clippers. What was the one weakness we said with the Warriors coming into the playoffs? Front court depth.
Yeah, front court. They had no inside.
They lose Andrew Bogut and then lose in seven games to DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin.
Right.
That's not a shock. That's not shocking at all.
Nope. In that game seven, that's exactly what happened. DeAndre Jordan goes and Blake Griffin. They had their day down low. And then all of a sudden the Clippers are moving on to the next round.
So with all the things you said, are you surprised by the firing at the end
of
the day?
Yes, at the end of the day. Because I think Mark Jackson.
If the owner runs it, then why are you so surprised?
I think that Mark Jackson.
Because it's a dumb move.
Because it's a stupid. You have one of the best coaches in basketball. You let him go. You let the man go due to some friction. No, I don't know what that friction was. It seems as though it had nothing to do with the X's and O's on the basketball court. This is some extracurricular stuff going on here.
That's what a coach does, Al. A coach is also responsible for the morale of his coaching staff, the morale between his front office. There's a lot more to this.
We'll agree to disagree. If you want to go in on it, facebook.com/currentsports. You can also tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, and we will talk about it till the moon comes up. All right, folks. Thank you so much for joining us here on today's Current Sports. Again, Current Sports TV tapes tonight. I sit down with MSU, the MSU Deputy Athletic Director, Greg Iani. He's like Mark Hollis's right-hand man. He's a great guy. If you want to be a part of that audience tonight, sign up online for free at WKAR.org. Again, you want to weigh on it? When is it fair to fire? 517-355-9527. We'll take your calls tomorrow as well, and facebook.com/currentsports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic hump day. And be easy, people.